Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 2. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week we have a whole lot to talk about. As always, I'm Mikey B, and joining me is Danya.
Hi guys.
And we also have a special guest, Natalie. Natalie, last week we had everyone kind of introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about kind of their history with Star Wars and what they like about it and different things. But give us a brief history on your experience with Star Wars thus far.
Well, hi. So I am Natalie, as the good man has already said. But yeah, I am a very, very new Star Wars fan, because up until about 2 months ago, I pretty much thought that I hated Star Wars due to the general cultural osmosis of what I thought it was. And then around The Force Awakens, I'll preface this by saying there are many, many people who were not really interested in Star Wars, saw The Force Awakens, was like, that's amazing. And then now retrospectively, like, you know, discovering the other movies and stuff like that. That's actually not quite what happened to me. It was more that about 6 months or so before The Force Awakens, I kind of got the vibe from everything coming out. I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Like, I'm going to be really missing out on something if I'm not into this. The way that I kind of do fandom is very like, I have to know everything. So I was like, all right, I'm going to watch all of the other ones, just even if it's just to have a grounding in every emotional hit in Force Awakens, like that it's going to actually be understandable for me. So I did that, and Andrew made me write an article about it, which ended up being about 5,000 words, which was an experience, about sort of my experience of watching Star Wars for the first time. I did the Machete Order.
I love the Machete Order.
Yeah, I really think that it worked very, very well for someone who might have had the problems with Star Wars that, you know, that I did, or that I thought I did, which was that, like, they weren't particularly character driven, is what I thought. And a lot of what I thought about Star Wars did not equal what I ended up seeing on the screen. And it turns out that that's because the narrative that I had heard about Star Wars, whether it's, you know, the general pop culture or kind of the loudest voices in the Star Wars fan base, were really not spreading the information correctly at all. And that explains a lot of things now to me, basically, about how Star Wars has been perceived by certain people, or why terrible geek men are as terrible as they are. Because I'm like, wow, you've been interpreting this very wrong for a long time, not just to myself, but also to them. I'm like, I'm watching this, I'm going, wow, if this is what you saw, and then that's the story that you're telling the world, you've got something wrong there. And I've been in this 2 months, and I think I have a better understanding of this than you do. Not to, you know, piss off anyone out there that might feel that way, but I found that a lot of the narrative that's been told about Star Wars to the world by the loudest voices in Star Wars life is not an accurate portrayal, and that it stopped a lot of people getting into the movies. And I think that the new movie, you know, whether people checked out the old ones beforehand or whether they're doing it now, I think the new movie is probably really changing the voices in fandom of why people like Star Wars. So I'm really excited about that. But yes, I'm very new, but very intense, basically. I know Andrew was on last week, and he loves things when they come out, and he doesn't necessarily go and like do the deep digging for stuff like Star Wars or stuff like that. He kind of just enjoys the excitement, which is fine, but I am sort of the opposite of that, in which I'm very deeply involved very quickly. And I feel like that I have a relatively good grounding in 2 or 3 months, because I'm trying to make up for 30 years of neglect in a very short space of time, basically.
Well, I absolutely love that. Having loved Star Wars for my whole life almost, it's fresh. It's nice to have someone fresh to the fandom. A completely different perspective, something that, like I said, I've never seen that kind of outside, because I always watched the films. I always was part of it. So I'm excited to hear all your perspectives on everything we have to talk about today.
And the thing I love about that as well, what I have found from everyone that I know that is a long-term Star Wars fan, when they kind of discovered why I had not been involved, because I wasn't just like, oh, I've never watched those. I was like, I don't think I'd like that. I think there's nothing in that for me. And I love Star Trek. I love other, like, science fiction stuff, and I love other, you know, big fandoms and all sorts, like, you know, Harry Potter, like anything else. Star Wars was just the one that I didn't. And I was always like, no, that's not for me. Like, and it's because of, I thought it was like very, had like very old fashioned viewpoints. Like I thought it was very wooden and like all of these things that anyway ended up not being true. And everyone that I know that's an older fan, like yourself, like friends of mine, Donya even, you know, they're like, oh, that's what your problem was. No, we didn't know that people thought like that. They were not aware that, you know, some people had such a bad impression of it. They kind of just thought, oh, some people aren't into it and that's it. So lots of people have just been really excited that I have discovered basically this. So it's fun.
It's been the best thing that's happened to me since The Force Awakens came out, was Natalie getting into Star Wars. Well, having a lot of people to talk to about it is always good for me.
I agree on that one. All right, guys. Well, if you also want to get involved in our conversation, guys, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Also, you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. So let's move on to the news. We have a lot of different news things to talk about today. First of all, I want to start off talking about Star Wars The Old Republic game update that came out. I know last week we talked briefly about Battlefront, and we also mentioned some people loving the Knights of the Old Republic, but this is Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO. They just recently had a new patch, and I just showed Danya the trailer for the latest expansion. What'd you think of that really quick, Danya?
It made me cry. Right before we connected the call, I watched it, and we were still on the call, and Mikey had to listen to me crying. It was a little bit embarrassing, but wow. I don't play the Old Republic yet. I will add the yet, because that little trailer for this update, it's probably enough to sway me into finding or making time to play it, because it hit me that hard. That was emotional, because if anyone hasn't seen it, it features twins, and it did the one thing with twins that wrecks me every single time, which is that one of them died, and I can't deal with that. So I was basically a blubbering mess right before we started recording.
Yeah, so Knights of the Fallen Empire, which is the latest expansion for Star Wars The Old Republic. I've been playing this game since launch, so since like 2011. I've been playing it for a long time. But the latest expansion, or the newest chapter that was released this week, was called Anarchy in Paradise. And just for those of you who haven't played the game, I was telling Danya and everyone else, is if you liked Knights of the Old Republic, you know, you had 1 and 2 that came out from BioWare, just like typical BioWare fashion, Knights of the Fallen Empire is story-driven. You know, they say your choices matters. You can decide whether to like someone, don't like someone, and those choices are going to come back and haunt you depending on what you make. But specifically this chapter, Anarchy in Paradise, it's about if you played the game, you have 4 types of characters you can play on each side, Empire or Republic side. But this chapter revolves around a bounty hunter companion. So if you played the bounty hunter story, you'll see a bounty hunter companion that you'll talk through. Whether you were actually a bounty hunter or not, you'll get introduced to a character. I'm not going to spoil the surprise if you haven't played it, but it's definitely worth checking out. I played through the whole thing. It's really fun. The reason I bring up Star Wars The Old Republic, not only the new news, but last week someone called it out that I actually used music from Star Wars The Old Republic in our intro music, at least for right now. So Eric, thank you for that comment on the Mandalorian Blockade. It was definitely well spotted. I showed it to Danya. I said, what do you think of this music? She said, I like it. It's definitely Star Wars. And it was kind of, I said, it was kind of, not a lot of people would know it. And you caught it right off the bat. So thank you very much for catching that there. You can also get a free copy of that Star Wars soundtrack. So if you liked our intro, they actually have released their soundtrack for free. And we'll post a link of that on our website and in the show notes, so you guys can download that.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say, I'm going to have to ask you to explain for me and all of the new Hyperball people that might be in the same boat as me to give some context for this game.
So this game takes place about 3,000 years before A New Hope, all right, before Star Wars A New Hope, before Luke does his thing and destroys the Death Star. And basically at this time, basically Lucasfilm's story has not decided whether this is canon or not canon. Because all the games coming out are, but this was released before, but it's still an ongoing game. So they haven't really, you know, it's kind of in that weird phase. And BioWare says, we're not going to do anything that's going to be directly related to the films. Because, again, it takes place so many before.
It's all so long ago that it doesn't really matter.
It really won't affect. But basically, just to give you an idea, and if you have any chance, and I'll link them in the show notes, there are some really cool trailers for this game out there. But 3,000 years before, you know, the Republic... It was before the fall of the Republic, you know, because you heard Qui-Gon Jinn and all of them talk about how, or even Obi-Wan and New Hope saying the Republic stood for 1,000 generations and stuff like that. So this is it. You are the old Republic. And if you're playing Republic side, which is my favorite side, I like being the good, you know, goody two-shoes on the light side Jedi as my main character. But, you know, it's one of those things where you are invaded. The Republic is invaded by the Sith Empire. And this is before Darth Bane, which is canon, which appeared in the Clone Wars series. It's before Darth Bane introduced the Rule of Two. So this is when there's a bunch of Jedi, and then there's a bunch of Sith. And basically, for the first, 50 levels, the entire... Actually, probably for the first 60 levels, it's all, you know, good guys, Republic versus the Empire, the Sith Empire. And it's an all-out battle between them. And so it's an MMO, so you can play it by yourself, or you can group up with friends. They have different group content that is four players, so you can get with three other friends and yourself, and you can go through a dungeon, or what they call a flashpoint, or you can group up with even more people, so you can have seven other people, so eight people or 16 people, what they call operations, and you guys can go into an even bigger challenge and fight these bosses and everything to save the Empire, save the Republic, or whatever. So it's a pretty massive game. And it is free to play. So the first 50 levels is completely free to play. There's no cost involved at all. And the nice part about that is you can just try it out because there's eight different stories. There's four for Republic. There's a smuggler story, you know, like Han Solo or my favorite, Lando. There is the Jedi story, which is a Jedi guardian or a sentinel. And then there's a Jedi consular, which is kind of like the Yoda character. You're more of a peacekeeper, but you're very powerful in the Force. And, of course, there's the trooper story. So that's the Republic side. And on Empire side, there is, you know, Sith Warrior story, kind of a Darth Vader-type character, if you will. There's a Sith Inquisitor, which is probably closer to Palpatine. A lot of Force lightning. A lot of Force lightning abilities. A Bounty Hunter. And then an Imperial Agent, which is kind of like your super spy-type story, which they're all really good. And you can play those free. On top of that, we also have some prizes to give away, which we'll talk about towards the end of the show, related to Star Wars The Old Republic today. But we will be posting some information on our Facebook, where you can actually get a chance to win a free month subscription to the game if you want to try it out. Not only can you do the free, but you can get a paid subscription or cartel coins, stuff to buy inside the game. So we'll talk more about how to win that later on today. But yeah, so that's Star Wars The Old Republic. Like I said, I've been playing this since like 2011, and it's pretty fun. It's free, so check it out.
That sounds fun. And this is more of a role-playing game, not a, like a, it's not like a first-person shooter or anything like that. It's like a...
Yeah, it's an MMORPG, so it's an action role-play RPG. There's different, you know, if you do sign up, there's a couple different ways to look at it. You know, you can do a role-play server where it is full-on role-playing, and you can look at, you know, be in the cantina and say, you know, whatever you want to say. You can be on a PvP server, which if you do that, just know that if you're on a certain planet and there are the other faction, so let's say you're a Jedi riding around on Tatooine, there might be some Sith Lords on Tatooine also looking to kill you. So you've got to be careful with that. And then there's just the normal player versus environment PvE server. And that's where you just do the story. And that's what I play on usually. It's just the
PvE
story stuff.
PvE is what I usually play when I pick up MMOs because I like the story-driven stuff personally. But
Yeah, and just one last thing is it's all voice acted too. So for the first 50 levels, it's you can literally just sit back and it's like watching a Star Wars film. It's awesome. So I think that's why I liked it the most. I'm like, it's a new Star Wars movie every week.
That's cool. And yeah, sorry to make you like explain something to you that's probably like, yeah, the sky is blue. This thing exists. But yeah, I've met a lot of even very young people, like people on the internet at the moment who are 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, who I just keep seeing them being like, wow, this about like new Star Wars properties like that have been around for a long time. And it's really adorable and amazing. And obviously I am sort of one of them. So yeah, if any of our hyperable people are in that boat, it's a really, there's another way that you can go and get involved, basically, if you are sort of only discovering this fandom for the first time and want to kind of dwell in it until a new movie comes out. You can go and have a new movie every week with the game.
Yep, and you can always message me and you can come, you know, we'll play together. I play pretty often, so never know. All right, moving on. One big thing, we finally got some news about Rogue One. Well, I guess not really about Rogue One. But about the toys for Rogue One. It's going to get its own Force Friday in September 2016. Guys, what do you think of that?
It tells me that the characters are going to be, like, as big a deal in the Star Wars universe, potentially, as the current characters. Like, that they're really... even the fact that they're making this movie at all, to me, you know, is... It's not weird. But, I mean, it's a little bit weird. I don't know why it doesn't just count as part of the, you know, the flow of movies, but I guess it's sort of like 4.5, but you can't sort of put 4.5 on, no, not even 4.5, 3.5, but you can't really put 3.5 like on the trailer of the movie. But, you know, if people are going to be wanting a new movie every year, it doesn't really shock me that they're going to be merchandising them as hard, but, you know, to get that momentum every year. But it makes me wonder about who the characters are that, you know, that they're going to be that desirable. Even, you know, when is the release date of the film? It's
going to be December 2016. So it's this year, at the end of the year.
So in September, they're going to expect that people are going to want to buy merch for this film, action figures for this film. So are we going to learn before then, like, who the characters are and why we care about them, like, to bring up the hype?
I would hope so.
Yeah, I would hope we get a trailer before then. But you know what? Here's the thing is you're going to have characters like Darth Vader, because Darth Vader is going to be in the film because it's before, you know, anything else happens.
Yeah.
So you're going to have this Darth Vader, you know, new Darth Vader action figures coming out, which I'm excited for stuff like that.
Isn't Tompkins supposed to be in it as well?
That's a rumor. I haven't seen anything confirmed from StarWars.com or anything like that. But yeah, it would be really cool to see some of these characters that we've seen in Episode 4. Or I'm hoping that we see some stuff like people from Rebels even in there. Because Star Wars Rebels takes place during that same time period. So I would like to see something, some kind of crossover, something there. But who knows? And at the same time, when you think about this, they're going to be releasing toys. Just like you said, Natalie, are we going to know anything about them? Just think about with the toys for The Force Awakens, the reason people couldn't find Rey toys is because for some reason they thought, oh, it's all going to be about Kylo Ren. And they have a bunch of Kylo Ren stuff. And you can't get a hold of Rey toys at all. It's like, really? But you know, you have to remember, in A New Hope and the original trilogy, it's all about Darth Vader. Like, Darth Vader's the most popular character. And like Darth Maul from Episode 1, where he's super popular, Darth Vader's not in A New Hope more than 4 or 5 minutes still. So who knows what they're going to do with the toys. But I am excited that they at least are going to get its own Force Friday. It's going to get its own launch. Did you guys participate in last Force Friday, the last launch of the Force Awakens toys?
I did. I got a BB-8 Sphero droid and a couple of t-shirts. So, and I just got a couple of Lego sets now because around where I was... they'd all been sold out for ages from about Force Friday onwards, so I couldn't get any of the Lego sets. So,
did you do that online, Donya, or was it like, did you go to a store? Because I don't know if we have this in Australia.
I did it online because the closest Disney store is in central London, which is a pain to get to. So,
yeah. Things we don't have in Australia, a Disney store.
Well, there
just
you go.
Just so you know. Yeah. I did not participate in Force Friday in September because in September I did not know what was up. But I gave myself my own Force Friday a couple of weeks ago and bought about $150 worth of Star Wars merch, like, in the course of, like, 2 days to build up my collection now that I care. So I have a shirt, I have a couple of X-Wings, I have a Funko on the way, I have all sorts. So, yeah. But I will probably be participating in this one at least online, especially if any of the characters are either of the Dameron's, because I watched Empire. I watched Jedi last night. And I am very, they're both in that, like, off screen in that movie. Like, his father is in the Pathfinders with Han on Endor, and his mother is in the Green Squadron with Lando, with Lando in the Endor battle. They're both off screen canonically in Return of the Jedi. And I feel like one of those characters would be the easiest way to tie that group of people to the current group of people, aside from the fact they're going to be, you know, potentially working on behalf of Leia. And I am interested in that. If we get any reveal about that kind of thing, I will definitely be, especially since they're pushing, like, the comic about, like, they did a comic about Poe's backstory. They're doing another comic about his life, like, before the thing. I'm like, why is that the character that you've chosen to do backstory for? Why is that the character you've chosen to do all these comics for? And I feel like it's because those characters are potentially going to be in Rogue One. So that's my theory, and I'll definitely buy stuff for them if it is, because I really love the comic.
Yeah, if either Shara or Kaz are in Rogue One, particularly Shara, because it's obviously about an X-Wing squadron, so she would probably be the most likely if they were to put her in. I will probably have, like, a complete meltdown and buy everything that they would release for her. So.
Well, here's my other question about Rogue One, because, Mikey, I listened to your episode last week. I listened to the first episode, and you guys were discussing, you know, the potential of them, like, handing off to Leia or something like that. Has it actually been confirmed that this mission to try and get the Death Star plans was successful? Because my impression of it so far, of this movie, that it was like, it was a failed mission, and then Leia, you know, what we see in A New Hope with Leia ended up being the completed one. I didn't realize this one was meant to be the one that was like, end scene, we've succeeded, go straight into A New Hope, Leia's got the plans. I thought this might have been like a failed, that you know, that they tried this 10 times and this is one of the times that failed. So I don't know where I got that impression from, but where did you get the impression from that this was actually going to tie straight into A New Hope, as opposed to kind of in the lead up to it?
So I am looking for that right now on Star Wars' website. I think it probably was when they did the reveal at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. I guess you could say there was a trailer, but there wasn't really a trailer. It was just the title that popped up, and, you know.
Yeah.
I think actually that's what it was. Is I think it was because the trailer that was released, if I can find it somewhere, I'll link it later on. But if I remember the trailer correctly, it was literally showing what you are meant to believe is Yavin 4, and then the Death Star comes up overhead. Like, so it's all about getting those plans, is what they talked about.
Yeah, I mean, it would be pretty depressing if it was just like, oh, we tried, we failed, goodbye, the end, if you know what I mean. So you'd hope that it was actually
the here's what I have here is Garth Edwards revealed that the film revolves around a rogue band of resistance fighters who unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring hope to the galaxy. So that's all it said. So maybe my interpretation was like they steal those plans because, you know, like I don't know. You know, you would think that if the plans had been attempted to be stolen multiple times before, the Empire would have done something like, all right, there's this exhaust port, you know. It's kind of small, but let's see if we can go ahead and cover that up. You know, let's put a shield over it. You know, something else. You know, just something to protect us from it. But you know, my feeling is like they stole the plans, they got it to Leia, and so we see that whole thing expand, and the Empire just doesn't have time to react to plans being stolen because the whole film is about recovering them.
Yeah, for some reason, I'm just a pessimist. I assumed that this was going to be, like, not the one that actually worked, or that, you know, and that they had to send Leia in to do it herself in, you know, later. So, no, apparently I'm just thinking negatively then, so that's fine. And, you know, that it's probably not going to end with them all, like, dying miserably and failing, so that's probably a good thing. That's probably a good thing in retrospect, but that's definitely where my head was at for some reason.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hopefully they don't all die. You know, that would be kind of sad. Introduce all these characters and they're all done.
X-Wing pilots don't have a very long lifespan usually, so...
Some of them are going to die. Let's just deal with that. Like, some of them, they're definitely going to die. Do you think this movie will have anything as kind of appealing as BB-8? Like, to anything that you know, kid-friendly, I guess, that's going to be like, everyone wants that?
Well, here's the thing. We just don't know enough about Rogue One. And if you guys remember, do you guys remember who owned R2-D2 and C-3PO before Luke did on the Tatooine? Captain Antilles is who did.
Yeah.
So how do we know that one of these people isn't Captain Antilles? He's not part of this crew that steals it. So it might be R2-D2 and C-3PO in this film. We don't know.
Can I ask you a question about that, actually? Because I just watched the trilogy again.
Mm-hmm.
And when 3PO tells that to Luke, the first time I watched it, I assumed he was lying. But apparently that's wrong. Apparently he was telling the truth.
It's C-3PO. He's not smart enough to lie.
Well, that's the thing. I thought that they had been in on it with Leia the whole time and that they were lying, basically, that they knew who Luke – not Luke, but they knew what they were doing. And every time, you know, 3PO is like, no, don't, you know, do that. I legitimately thought that they were in on it with Leia and not that they were just kind of like there at the time and she used them and then they got sucked into it. I assumed the whole time that C-3PO was like lying and manipulating. Apparently not. That was a perspective that I had wrong, but that was the impression I got the whole time. I thought that thing about Captain Antilles was a lie, but now that I know it isn't, yes, that's very possible because, like, obviously they were with Anakin and Obi-Wan and now they're, how did they end up with Captain Antilles? You know, what's happened there?
Where's the story going? You know, and here's the thing is, you know, we just don't know enough about the story between, you know, C-3PO and R2 in between those films. We know Leia went and had, you know, was raised on Alderaan. Luke was raised on Tatooine. But we don't know anything about them being raised. We don't know any. There was a book about Obi-Wan on Tatooine, which is no longer part of canon. So we don't know what happened there. But there's, you know, 20-year gap between that, what we see on screen and stuff. So this is going to be taking place during that time. And, you know, if you look at any of the books or any of the kind of evolution of C-3PO R2 during the films, C-3PO is always kind of this bumbling. He always tries. Like, if you read the novelization, even The Force Awakens, when Han Solo shows up at the Resistance base, C-3PO jumps and he's like, oh, Captain Solo, you know, you might not recognize me because of my red arm. And then all of a sudden he realizes, like, oh, he's looking at Leia and I've just interrupted something. Like, he doesn't actually catch it. And so it's one of those things where when he said that, I never actually – maybe it was because I saw it when I was a young kid and I didn't think that deep into it. You know, I was just taking it at face value, which is probably where I got that, and it's just in my notion, in my head. But who knows? You know, we just don't know yet. So that's one of the reasons why I'm really excited about Rogue One. So Rogue One gets their Force Friday, so all the toys. But I want to kind of segue from that real quick, from Rogue One, into the Toy Fair 2016 news that came out. We got some new Force Awakens Funko Pops that have come out, and they've announced that, yes, they are. What do you guys think about those? I know you guys already said that you have some on their way.
Well, I have one not from this collection on the way, but all I have wanted, all I have wanted was the old Luke. That's the only one that I don't collect Funkos. Like, I don't have like 20 of them. I have like very, very, very limited amount of Funkos. And all I've wanted is the old Luke. And I was just like, why didn't they do one? Like, I don't understand. And now they have. So I'm happy and I'm very excited that they're not going to be limited edition. They're going to just be the run, so I don't have to, like, fight people at Comic-Con for it or something like that.
I'm basically exactly the same. My reaction was exactly the same. So I found the catalogue that leaked out of Toy Fair, and I was like, if someone's actually lying about this, I'm going to riot because there were spelling mistakes in the catalog. So one of the droids was, the designation on it was wrong, and Snap Wexley's name was Sanp Wexley.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
So I was like, what? But I went through Instagram, people who were at Toy Fair, finding out, like, is this legit? And it is. It's the legit catalog with spelling mistakes in it. So
I'm excited for the Maz toy. It's
actually I was going to say, I don't love every single Funko ever existed. Some of them, I think, some characters I think don't particularly work well as Funkos in all various fandoms, and some do. I just want the Luke one for me, but the Maz one looks the best. That, as a Funko, works really, really well. Yeah. So I really like that.
She looks really cool. The Luke one is the one that I wanted. Every so often I will tweet out at Funko going, yeah, but where's Luke, though?
Yeah.
But I actually really liked FN2199 as well. I think Stormtroopers are suited quite well to Funko Pops, so I think his one will probably be quite cool, too. But yeah, the Luke is what I'll have. I'm the same as Natalie. I don't own a lot of Funkos. The only one I've ever purchased for myself is the helmetless Walmart exclusive Poe Dameron. That's the only Funko I've ever purchased for myself. I have a Hawkeye one that my best friend gave me for my birthday last year, but that's the only other Funko that I own, but I will be buying Luke.
Yeah, I have that Poe on the way, and I have a Bucky Barnes unmasked Winter Soldier from Captain America, the Winter Soldier. The one that has his actual face in it as opposed to the goggles, and that's pretty much it. I really pick and choose. I wanted some of the exclusive Hannibal ones, but I couldn't get them. But, yeah, we know other people on Hyperbull that will buy every Funko from a collection if they can, but I'm very choosy about them.
So also at Toy Fair, we also saw a look at a action figure of Darth Maul as the old master seen in the Star Wars Season 2 Rebels trailer. So what do you guys think of that, as it is confirmed 100% that Darth Maul is the old master in Rebels, and getting an action figure for him?
I'm feeling very, very validated, because I've been screaming that the old master was Darth Maul in the trailer for like months since the trailer came out. And a couple of the people who watch Rebels other than Michal were like, no, it's not. It can't be Darth Maul. It can't. And I'm like, no, it's totally Darth Maul. It's going to be. Just you wait. I'm gonna be right. And yeah, it turns out that it's him. So I'm feeling very validated at the fact that I caught that in the trailer without having to turn up the brightness or manipulate the trailer in any way. So I'm really excited, because there have been like a couple of expansions in like book form and in comics and stuff where you get more of Darth Maul, and he's such an interesting character. So the fact that he's coming to Rebels is going to be great, I think.
Well, this makes sense to me now, because I keep wondering why the hell he's still in merchandise. Because, like, I go to the supermarket and they've got, like, you know, little, you know, grab them for $5, you know, kids action figures and stuff, and they still have Darth Maul. I don't know if it's just because Australia is like 10 years behind everything else, but like he is still being merchandised in the Star Wars products, and I find that insane given that he was in 5 minutes of The Phantom Menace and that's it, and I don't think he even had any lines. So I know nothing about like how much more this character has going on. But the fact that they're still actually using him, I suppose, makes sense with the merchandising, because I guess he looks cool and they can make more stuff with him on it.
Yeah, look, let's be real. The reason that people probably love him so much from the original trilogy is because the prequel trilogy is because he didn't have a lot of lines. I think he said two things in the whole of Phantom Menace, and that's it. That's probably why people like him. He didn't have a lot of script to drag him down as a character.
To mess up.
Yeah.
But he had some awesome lightsaber work. Yeah. You know,
okay.
I will say, yeah, I like Darth Maul in the Toy Fair images more than I liked him in Clone Wars. If you guys didn't see Clone Wars, just a quick recap. He had like a complete mechanical body from waist down, obviously, because of what happened in
Phantom Menace.
Yeah, if you didn't see what happened in Phantom Menace, he got cut in half. So his bottom half was all mechanical, and it was kind of weird looking. And his horns had grown bigger. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, artistic liberties they took in Clone Wars, but in the toy, he looks closer to what he would have been in A New Hope, or not A New Hope, A Phantom Menace, and I think that's, I think that works for him. You know, I think the horns growing way too big were just a little, he was kind of crazy in the Clone Wars, so it looks like he got some of his sanity back, maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
His cool lightsaber business is actually something I've been thinking about a relative amount in after The Force Awakens, because I have a theory that when Rey makes her own lightsaber instead of using Anakin's, that she will have one based on her staff. Like, she will have more of a melee weapon that she holds in the middle and uses in the same way, because she's used to using her staff, and obviously his is sort of similar to that. So would you be into that if Rey ended up having like a Darth Maul-esque saber instead of like a sword?
Yes.
I'd be totally cool with that. I don't want to go too far into Rebels, but you actually see some a hidden sect of Jedi that actually have the saber staff as their main weapon in the season 2 trailer. So, but yeah, I'd be cool with that, because I think Rey would definitely be, because she grew up using that staff, and I think that would work for her.
Yeah.
All right, so I've been putting it off on purpose because it's going to lead us later on. We also had some other news, big news actually. My phone kind of blew up. I got to work and I had like 28 messages, everyone telling me about this, including Danya, who's freaking out about it. We got our first episode 8, Star Wars episode 8, untitled here, production teaser trailer. So it starts off with the island that we saw at the end of the film of episode 7. That, you know, Chewie, R2, and Rey flew to. And you see that flying over the water, and then it opens up on Luke Skywalker. So what do you guys think of that? Just that opening right there.
I really love... It's ridiculous because it was barely 30 seconds long, and I was like, this is the greatest thing that's going to happen to me this week. I like the new angle and seeing everyone back and the sun shining and everything, like, I'm just so excited that they started production, because it's still so long until the next, until episode 8 comes out, and just even that little bit, I'm a little bit surprised that we're getting something for episode 8 before they released any footage of Rogue One at all.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts about that, but yeah, first of all, the fact that they opened on this shot, it could mean two things. It could mean, number one, it could mean that Rey and Luke, or Luke, his story, why he went, all of that is going to be central to episode 8, which I hope that it is, and that's very important to me. And number two, that this was literally filmed with episode 7, like that they got Rian in and they're going to be like, hey, we're going to use this same shot. We're going to be using that shot again in episode 8, do you want to come over and take over and do a day of production while we're still here, so we don't have to pay for another day? So they may have had this footage in the can from original filming. Like, we don't know. Yes, they're saying welcome to episode 8, but are they saying that, is this just something they planned to release when they started filming, or was this actually done this week, if you know what I mean?
Well, I personally think it's actually done this week. Not to say that it couldn't have been shot with 7, because obviously we see near identical, same end. I wouldn't be surprised if the flyover to the island is CG or was taken before and it's reused footage. That makes sense. But just if you want... So I just talked about the first shot. It's opening up on Luke's face. You know, the fade in with the music, which I will say I was beyond giddy. I'm like looking at it and I'm like, I got this dumbest grin on my face while looking at it. I was like, yes, it's all about Luke, you know. But when you see the over-the-shoulder shot, we never saw an over-the-shoulder shot of Rey like that. That's in there. And also, if you look at it, you know, I went to film school, so coming from the background that I have, you can see the footage. It's not color graded. It's not, you know, post-processed. I actually wouldn't be surprised if this is put together from dailies, or even just like, because the camp, especially the over-the-shoulder shot of Rey, I wouldn't even be surprised if this is someone else on the set filming the making of, you know, the behind-the-scenes footage, it literally is their handheld camera. It does, because it doesn't look like a finished film by any means, so it doesn't look like the same shots that were in The Force Awakens. And there is a little movement on Rey, kind of like it is handheld, and that way they can go from that, and then they cut to Rian Johnson calling out when he calls cut. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if it's just they planned it out, but it is something new, which is what I would hope, because, you know, it would... not to say it's disingenuous, but I would hate for that to be a shot, a year and a half ago for the Force, during the Force Awakens, saying, here we are, guys, start of episode 8. Why would,
if they knew that footage was going to be in episode 8, and they got Rian to come in and do a day of his own production, because they knew they needed that same spot, and I don't know, that island is hard to get to or something. But no, I mean, sure, it could be now. They're probably going to spend quite a lot of time on that island, I'm going to assume. He's going to make Rey run up and down some hills, with him on her back and stuff like that, So they're probably going to hang out there for a while, I'm going to assume. So, yeah, I'm sure they are going back there. It just kind of amazes me that would be their first shot, if you know what I mean, that they'd literally go and do that production scene on location as opposed to doing all the easy stuff in the studio first. So
I get
the impact of why they've released that shot, but I didn't realize they'd already gone out there. Someone do some digging and go and see if they were actually back on the island in the last couple of months, because I know people knew that when they were there the first time.
It said there was release that they were filming already, and then I know they're back in the studio now because John Boyega said, hey, we're back in the studio. And so they're at Pinewood again, so he's there. Donya, why don't you go down to Pinewood and let us know what they're doing over there?
But, I can do that.
Yeah, you're down the street, right?
an hour away.
Yeah, it's new footage of Luke and Rey. Again, you see the holding the lightsaber.
Yeah.
So my next question would be is, do we think that this is going to be literally episode 8 is going to pick up right where episode 7 finished off? Or is this going to be because every other Star Wars film has had at least a minimum of one year between it. So is this going to be a pick right up, or is this going to be something that's going to be seen and it's going to be 1 year later at the bottom of the screen and then it goes into the story?
I don't know. I kind of don't know, because again, this is something I came to the realization of only last night. So I got really prepared. Is that I did not realize how big the gaps between the original trilogy movies were. I knew there was it wasn't a jump straight, next day, but what I thought was months was years. I did not realize that between the end of New Hope and start of Empire, that there were 3 years, that they'd all been hanging out and bonding and stuff for 3 years. And it kind of makes a lot of the emotional impact of the way they treat each other make more sense. But there was nothing about it that gave me that impression, except for, I guess, the original release dates of the films. And then even, between Empire and Jedi, when they go and eventually get Han from Jabba, I'm it took you a year to come up with this plan. You end Empire with Lando being bye, I'll see you on Tatooine. It's a year later you get there. What? And I was astonished that those gaps were so big. They do make sense, but I had not been aware that they were that big. And so having the new film go straight into, where we left off would be very, very different. I suppose
it would be very different, and I'm not entirely sure it would make a lot of sense either, because obviously not even just from a Rey and Luke perspective, but from a Snoke and Kylo Ren perspective, the fact that Snoke gets Hux to bring him back so that he can finish Kylo Ren's training, then if they do it where episode 8 follows on directly from episode 7, they're going to have to show a lot of that stuff unless they do weird time jumps during the film. And I think that's going to be so unlike anything that they've done in any of the Star Wars films before that it's going to feel a little strange if that's the direction that they go in. So I'm not sure, because also what are they going to do with the opening crawl if it follows on directly from it?
But don't you want to see Luke's first conversation with Rey? How are they going to skip that?
And that's where I can almost be. Maybe it's a flashback during meditation. There's all sorts of things they can do with that. So I don't know. Obviously the prequels made it a little bit easier to see that there was time jumps. From Phantom Menace to Attack of the Clones, there's 10-year jumps. And then from there, from that, you can tell there's time, especially we have the entire Clone Wars series, six seasons, if you will, of story in between, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So there's time there, and there's time between 3 and 4. But this one, that scene literally is what, episode 7 ends on. So it's definitely going to be interesting how they handle that. Because you really almost want time to have passed. As much as I would love to see Luke training Rey, Snoke training Ren, see parallels between the two, maybe an 80s type montage, you know. You know, Kylo Ren carrying Snoke on his back.
Rocky music.
Yeah, Rocky music. You know, who knows? Just something like that. And you would just be funny, but who knows what they'll end up doing, obviously. But there's also other Episode 8 news.
Yes, so we actually got casting news along with this. So I don't know how to say his first name. Is it Benicio? Benicio del Toro, who was previously rumored for Rogue One, is actually going to be playing a potentially villainous character for Episode 8. So that's confirmed. Those little rumors that were going around that he was going to be involved in Star Wars, confirmed. But we've also got two other characters joining the cast. So Laura Dern is...
I'm really excited.
Yeah. Laura Dern is going to be joining the cast for Episode 8. And a relative newcomer called Kelly Marie Tran. You probably won't have seen her unless you watch a lot of College Humor videos, because she's been involved in a lot of those. But otherwise, she hasn't had many roles at all, except for a supporting role in an upcoming Netflix original. I did some digging because I get obsessive when I don't know something. So I went looking around and I found her online resume through the casting agency that manages her. And on that resume, it says Star Wars Episode 8, and under her role, which isn't named, it says lead, which I thought was quite interesting because... I mentioned in the last episode that there'd been rumors about those rewrites and what was happening with some roles. And I went back and I found the exact quote. So the Wrap's Jeff Snyder on one of his podcasts said, "I said before there were two young female roles. Now I actually hear that the rewrite will make these roles smaller. They want to get to know better the characters they already have. So the new rewrite is shrinking the new roles in order to spend more time with Rey, Poe, and so on." So I think it's quite interesting that Tran is still listing this role on her online resume as lead.
I mean, if you're like a small actress that no one's heard of, like, no offense to her, but like, and you're in Star Wars, like, as if you're not going to put like lead, like, you're not going to like play down your involvement, if you know what I mean. So... I have seen many a small actor kind of say, "Oh yeah, so and so starred in Glee." I'm like, Kurt Mega, you didn't star in Glee, if you know what I mean. So,
well,
you know what I'm talking about. So we don't know. You know, I don't think having that on her resume is a necessary. You know, it's biased. I'll say that.
Well, but at the same time, you know, the rewrites. We just heard the news about the rewrites right before we started this podcast. So, you know, who knows how recently her online resume was updated.
Yeah, that's,
you know, they could have done, you know, a couple script readings with her as that one of those lead roles, and they rewrite it, and now she's a smaller role. And even then, she might still be a somewhat, you know, pivotal character in it. Who knows? You know, we don't really know much about Episode 8. I will say, when I saw that Laura Dern is going to be in it, I was super excited because I instantly flash back to remembering her as someone from Jurassic Park. I was like, yes, you know, I'm excited to see her and see what she'll do, you know, just in the films, because we just don't know anything about her character whatsoever. Like I said, she's a very strong actress, and I liked her in everything she's played, so I'm excited to see her. But Kelly Marie Tran, we just don't know much about what she's going to be doing or... Really, I've looked at some of her College Humor stuff just so I can see who she is. She seems like she can be a great actress, and I'm excited to see how she plays her role in Star Wars.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I watched her College Humor stuff as well when I went looking it up. Yeah, she's got really good comedic timing. Like, she nails it. She's really funny. So it will be interesting to see her on there. But Laura Dern is the one that I'm interested in the most, I will admit, because I do really want to know who she's playing. because obviously the very obvious assumption and theories came out immediately after she was cast everywhere. Twitter, Reddit, Facebook comments, everywhere. And it's the obvious assumption that she's connected to Luke in some way.
And Rey.
Yeah, that's the that's the obvious assumption everyone is going with online, which probably means that's not the way that they're going to go.
You never know. Sometimes it's the simplest answer is correct, and you just never know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, obviously, lots of Episode 8 news. Check out that production teaser. Get super excited like we were. I do want to move on to our spotlight topic today, which is probably one of my favorite characters of all time. Like I said, I may or may not have had this person as an imaginary friend growing up. So our spotlight topic today is none other than Luke Skywalker. And obviously, we have him to talk about not only from Revenge of the Sith when he was born, all the way to now, the teaser in Episode 8. So we have a lot to talk about with Luke. So let's start off in the Revenge of the Sith. Think about it. So Luke is seen, it's a little baby, right there at the end. And he's left on Tatooine with his Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. And something I was thinking about as I was writing up the notes for the show is he's left with someone who is not actually any type of blood relation whatsoever. Uncle Owen is actually his step-uncle he's a son of Kleeg Lars, who he had in a previous marriage before he married Shmi Skywalker. So there's really he's left with these kind of random people. Essentially, so do you guys have any opinion why you think they left him with him?
I think it is the stupidest decision in the world. I have so much beef with this. Number one, Kleeg Lars. I don't buy Kleeg Lars and Shmi Skywalker's relationship. I think it's creepy. He bought her and then set her free, quote unquote. I'm like, no, you just literally bought yourself a sex slave and now she has to be grateful to you. Like, and so I don't like that. Also, like, why would you literally take him back to the place where Anakin grew up and leave him there with Anakin's last name, if you know what I mean? Like, why? Why wouldn't you at least change his name? Like, this was not a good plan for hiding him.
Well, do you think they even intended to hide him? Maybe it was like a trap that, Obi-Wan was there. Maybe it was a trap to bring Vader to him. Who knows?
Why would you? I mean, anyway.
we'll talk more about Kleeg Lars later. But yeah, no, I agree. It's like you just left this little kid with, just two random people. Like, there's no blood relationship at all. I guess.
Hey, remember Anakin?
Yeah, I guess Padme met them once before, so I guess it's kind of okay. Maybe it's like, of all the people, like, I totally get leaving Leia in the hands of, Bail Organa, cool. Alderaan, peaceful planet, aligns with the same thing, Naboo. How come Luke didn't go anywhere near Naboo? How come he didn't go, anyone who had closer relationships with the Amidala family or anything like that?
I mean, I can buy them splitting them up because I'm trying to remember, was it common knowledge that was going to have twins?
No, Anakin didn't know. Well, like, Darth didn't know that there were two. Didn't know that there were twins.
Yeah. I mean, then it's stupid. This is even stupider then. Because random twins on Alderaan with the senator.
Yeah, with Organas.
You wouldn't make the connection. One child, maybe you would. But two? See, it's the stupidest. Yeah.
And I always loved how Bail was like, oh, we'll take the girl. My wife and I want to adopt a baby girl. No boys here. But yeah, I don't know. And also the level of privilege, like princess versus farm yokel. Like, sorry.
Hey. Your life, Luke. Exactly. So right. So Luke is, left on Tatooine. And it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, Revenge of the Sith. He's left there. But moving on to A New Hope, you're right. He's left on as a farm yokel kind of here, but he does do a couple things there. It's from there he has that dreams and hopes of going out to the stars, leaving it. And without going into too much of any of the new books that have come out, they draw the Lost Stars book draws a lot of parallel to Luke's story at the beginning of A New Hope. where he wants to get away. And if you look at the original script or any of the stuff that was cut, like the
deleted scenes. New Hope tell so much about him, and I don't know why you would have deleted those. Like, it was so character based and it was so like world building of who he is that I don't understand why they cut a lot of the stuff. I don't think George Lucas understood like humans or like what people find funny or interesting, because the stuff he cut versus didn't cut, and the stuff he cut and then was like told to put back in, he doesn't seem to have a very good concept of like what people actually care about. So anyway, but yeah, the deleted material. Well, it's true. I've listened to like a lot of podcasts in the last month, like a lot of Mark Hamill talking about how much stuff George Lucas cut out, and then that his editors, usually his wife, had to be like, no, put that back in. They're not laughing at you. They like it. Like, he seemed to be really paranoid about being laughed at, George Lucas, and cut a lot of stuff because of that. And then the stuff that he thought was funny is stuff that everyone else thinks is dumb. So anyway, look, I've had a very, like, short period intense crash course, and I've got some opinions and I'm here to share them. Point is, all that deleted Luke stuff on Tatooine should have stayed in.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
Yeah, his relationship with Biggs Darklighter, I think, you know, they added one of the scenes back in the special edition, but the other scene they cut out still.
Okay. The scene with Biggs that they added back in the special edition is one of the few additions to the film that I will 100% agree with. I don't understand why that hit the cutting room floor in the first place.
Do you mean when they meet on Yavin?
Yeah, not
that
in
wasn't
the
in the original?
No, that's that not wasn't.
Okay, way to have, like, no impact. Like no, like, you see, this is what I mean. He doesn't understand human beings. Like, I swear to God. He's like a robot. Like, well, he doesn't understand that narrative of, oh, my old friend, I've met up with them again. They've dived in and saved me and left me free. This is even worse. It's like, you know, like, why cut everything that leads to, like, that Biggs dying, if you know what I mean? Like that has no impact without any backstory, so...
Well, I'll argue on behalf of Lucas in this case is, you know, A New Hope was a micro-budget film at the time. You know, he spent a lot of his money on producing things that didn't exist at the time, and... I could see them, you know, little things just making the cut because it had to be a certain time. You know, studios have a demand on these things. And, you know, obviously I would argue more if there's that sort of stuff was cut in Empire and Return of the Jedi. But it's just one of those things where at that time, like, I'll kind of let that slide. But I agree. Adding Biggs back in on Yavin 4 before they go to attack the Death Star adds that emotion, lets you introduce this person who decides to stay with him. After Wedge Antilles leaves, Luke, he's like, get out of here, you can't do anything else anyway. Hey, don't talk about Wedge that way. I love Wedge.
No! But,
I hate him.
No.
I hate him. What? Anyway. He's like, oh, my shoelace broke. I have to go. Bye. Every single mission that he is on, he always finds a way to do nothing.
What are you talking about? It's him and Lando that take out the second Death Star.
Yeah, but he kind of hangs behind and lets everyone else do the work.
I will agree with Natalie on this.
I really hate him.
Maybe my view of Wedge is more from the Star Wars Rogue Squadron series, and I love Wedge.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Anyway, we're not here for Wedge. Yeah. The deleted scenes as well, just showing his perspective is kind of, like, not really fitting in, like, as well. Like, not just with Biggs, but with, like, he hangs around with that whole gang of kids. They don't really like him. He's, like, the weirdo, like, scapegoat that's, like, tacked on to their group. You know, he's, like, not really got any respect. He's not a leader, you know, nothing like that. And he's kind of really downtrodden, and that's... That kind of makes his whole attitude and how optimistic he is even sweeter, I think, if you know what I mean.
Well, we know he never got to go to the Tashi station to pick up some power converters. But, you know, in A New Hope, he definitely has this optimistic, bright-eyed view of the galaxy. You know, he's dreaming to move off. He wants to go to the Academy. You know, his application to the Academy. And this is not, like, the Rebellion, you know, or the Rebel Alliance Academy.
No, he's not political. He's like, I want to join the...
The Imperial Academy, and I want to learn how to fly. I want to do, you know, he wants to be part of something more. And it's, unfortunately, it's a, you know, it's a great thing that R2 got there to him and kind of catalyzed his whole story to move forward. But it's a horrible thing that happened to his aunt and uncle that raised him. Again, regardless of, you know, this weird couple raising a kid, you know, it is, it's that moment, you know, even when he is introduced to Obi-Wan Kenobi and he says, I have something for you, your father wanted to have when you're old enough, and kind of introduce him about his past that he doesn't actually know. Again, he's been told lies about his father, that his father was a, you know, was on a freight, just was, you know, was on a freighter, you know, it was, you know, it's not actually a Jedi or anything like that. It's one of those things where he doesn't even want to do it. And it's not until he realizes that, his aunt and uncle could be in trouble, and he flies, you know, he rides back on his speeder, and then he sees them dead, that it propels him to say, yes, I'm going to take this journey now. And he actually finally has something to, you know, to fight for. Because remember, before, he wanted to do push his applications through sooner. Like, he didn't care about joining the Empire or not. And then now he has someone to fight for, his aunt and uncle. Maybe avenge, maybe, but, you know, he has something to push him through.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talk about that and talk about how, like, you know, he's sitting there whining about, you know, not going off to flight school and stuff like that when the others did. But, like, he's a grown-ass adult. Like, he could have gone at, you know, he could have chosen to go. And he was the one not propelling his own story until something actually happened, you know. And it's very much kind of like Rey being like, I have to go back to Jakku. It's like, why, Rey? Why do you have to go back to Jakku? But with Luke, I don't really think it was like, you know, Uncle Owen with like an iron rod, if you know what I mean. Like, yes, he was trying to do the right thing by his family, but, like, you know, if he was less, you know, family orientated, if he was less, if he was more independent, he would have just been like, no, I'm going regardless. And he didn't go. You know, he talked things through with them, you know, he kind of still treated them as parents, and it's only sort of once they get fried that he's like, well, there's nothing here for me now. Like, he was the one stopping himself going before, which I think kind of says a lot as well.
Yeah, there's, as you watch it over and over, that moment where he sees them and he looks away and then forces himself to look back, it's such a quietly powerful moment that I don't know if that came from George Lucas directing him or not, or if that was purely Mark Hamill adding something to it, but that is such forcing himself to look back to see what the Empire is actually capable of, what they're willing to do. Like, that I both love and get heartbroken by that moment every single time I watch it. It's just such a small thing, because it barely lasts a couple of seconds, but I think that's one of the great things about Luke through the whole series, is that sometimes it isn't in what he says, it's in these little moments, these glimpses that you get of him just in the background,
yeah,
that is what builds him up, and he's so fascinating in that.
This was the biggest shock to me, or one of the biggest shocks to me of the whole series of watching it, is that, because for some bizarre reason, all I've heard from kind of, I think this is, again, this is from the public narrative driven by men who think that the douchebag version of Han Solo is what you aspire to, and ignore everything about basically Han Solo after he gets a clue, anything about Leia and anything about Luke. These people are just apparently hung up on being a dick because Han Solo says it's okay. And that's the kind of people that I feel like have spread too much of the narrative, is that Luke is, like, boring and wooden. Like, that Mark Hamill's acting is wooden. It's not. It's so much more subtle than Harrison's. Like, Harrison plays Han like he's a cartoon. Mark plays Luke like he's a real person. And he has a lot of background stuff, like you know, him, like, his, like, kind of, when he's finding Han melodramatic and, like, rolling his eyes, or just, like, small little, like, speechless moments. Like, he is a much more naturalistic character than probably definitely than Han, and maybe even more than Leia as well. Like, the acting style is something that I really like, and maybe at the time it was not as, you know, that's not how people did things, but I personally really, really, really liked it and got a lot from it.
So, continuing on the narration about Luke itself is, you know, in A New Hope, this is where he's also introduced the Force, and not just him, but the entire audience is introduced to the Force through Ben Kenobi. It's really interesting to look at Luke, and he literally takes everything Ben Kenobi says at face value. He's being introduced to something he's never heard of before. You know, think of even real life today, a religion or a theory or just something that you just don't know. And you take it completely at face value. So much so that he even, at the end of the film, when everything is up to him, he feels like Ben is talking to him and he turns off his targeting computer. People even guess on him on this. That is, you know, an evolution of his character, and kind of Luke is this shining hope. You know, when you think of the title, A New Hope, Luke is that hope for the galaxy, for the story. And you definitely see the parallel between, and I understand that people comparing A New Hope to The Force Awakens, and you definitely see that same parallel between him and Rey, but Luke just kind of evolving from a farm boy, like you mentioned, on Tatooine, all the way to this expert pilot and someone who has, you know, the ability to tap into this foreseen power that no one has seen in years, just definitely drives his character.
The thing, yeah, what I was sort of saying as well about his, the way that it's kind of played and his, I don't know, his sort of optimism, I guess, and his sort of goodness is, again, like when you were sort of growing up as a fan of Luke Skywalker and stuff like that, how was that kind of seen, I guess, by people in, you know, the 90s or whatever about him as a character versus, I guess, Han or, you know, any of the other male characters? Because to me, he's a very atypical hero. Like maybe it's not as atypical as I think it is, but when I think of, like, heroes in movies in the 70s, I don't necessarily think of, like, twinky little boys who are really in touch with their feelings. And I really appreciate that he is, and I love, like, everything that he is, and that he is kind of, you know, so good-hearted, yet it doesn't mean that he's, like, you know, we must do good. Like, he's still really temperamental. He still gets really angry and weird about stuff, but he cares so much about things and he's really open about that, versus Han, who's kind of like, oh, have to pretend I care about nothing, if you know what I mean. Like, it's like a defense mechanism for him. So what was the view of Luke Skywalker, like, throughout the last 20 years? Because I'm seeing that people really love him in fandom at the moment, but that's like the current climate of fandom. He's a perfect character for them because we are getting back, we're cycling back through Loki and Sherlock, and we like men that are douchebags and they're more interesting than good people. We're cycling back into Steve Rogers and stuff like that, into we really love people who are actually decent, and, you know, not that they're progressive. They're not like, you know, they're not like, oh, we're good and thoughtless and dumb about it. Like, oh, we have to do the right thing, I'm brainless. But these complex characters that are intrinsically good to people, that's something that hasn't been popular in fandom in the last 5 years, maybe 10 years, at least in fandoms that I operate in. But it is now. And so I'm seeing a lot of new fans really get attached to Luke in a way that I haven't seen that much of before, you know, just from kind of having a wider view of people in all different fandoms. So what was the view of him, like, when you were growing up?
So when I was growing up and when I was really into Star Wars, I was still really young. So we're talking from around the time when I was 4 or 5 and going up through school and stuff. And my brother was, like, absolutely not into it at all, and the reason he never really got into it is that he thought he wasn't interested in any of the characters. He thought Luke was too whiny. He thought, you know, that Han just was boring anyway. Like, my brother just was not into Star Wars at all. But when I was at school, and there was, like, a small group of us who really liked Star Wars, and we really loved the films. and we would play Star Wars. Like, that's all we wanted to play. And I would always volunteer to be Luke all the time. But no one else wanted to be Luke. They all thought at that point that he was just whiny and boring and kind of, and I'm like, no, Luke's the best. Like, he's the big hero. He's amazing. I would want to be Luke. And I would always volunteer to play Luke when we were playing Star Wars. So, but then you've got to imagine as well, these are like, we're like 5, 6 years old at that point. And I think the prevalent jokes that are made within pop culture, within other shows that reference back to Star Wars, has always been that, you know, that view of it, like, Luke is whiny, Han has swagger, and Leia is this princess, and Han and Leia's love story is like this epic thing. It's like that. That's kind of the focus of it. And it's just, it's where it's reduced down to something simple that was easy to make into a laugh a lot of the time, to be like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Isn't this funny? Aren't we clever, kind of thing. Look at us referencing this huge movie franchise. And I think that's it. It's kind of when you boil down characters to one base characteristic, and then you let that control the whole narrative, is where you start losing the nuances in the characters and what makes these films so great. And I think it just got out of control that turned into being like the big thing, like what everyone saw. But absolutely, when I was growing up, people would see Luke as this whiny child, basically, and it just didn't sit right with me, because I always loved Luke as a kid anyway, and I had both of Luke's lightsabers. I had the blue one, and I had the green one as well.
I'll agree with you too at the same time, Danya. I, you know, growing up liking Star Wars, I never really saw any problems with liking Luke. I will say, I think from the outside perspective, he was definitely not shown as like the cool character. Han Solo always had that swagger, the scoundrel.
Yeah. Which, by the way, sorry, this is not the Han spotlight, it's the Luke spotlight. Han is 50,000 times more melodramatic than anyone in these movies. He is a complete drama queen. He is not cool. He is not like, oh yeah, I'm smooth, I'm cool, I've got it. He is the most melodramatic character in the movies, certainly in the trio. So I don't know how that got like ignored, but carry on.
Without going to defend Han at the same time, you know, he's got a bounty on his head. That's a hard thing to live with. But, you know, yeah. Luke, you know, for me, Luke always was the center of the story. He was the character you follow. You know, to draw a parallel to another fandom I'm a big fan of is the Harry Potter series. You know, Luke is Harry Potter in this story. It's just like Harry is in his story. But at the same time, when you look at fandom, you know, there are certain people that prefer, instead of Harry, they like Severus Snape, which is people like Darth Vader. People like Ron Weasley over, you know, Harry. And it's like, that's the Han Solo, you know. So I think that's the truth. And I think it's just one of those things where, because Star Wars has been around for so many years, Luke definitely got boiled down to one or two lines, and A New Hope, you know, really kind of cemented it into him being that kind of whiny character, what was seen there at the very beginning before his journey started. Going through Empire Strikes Back, you know, there is some whininess in there too, and I won't argue against that. But at the same time, it shows different types of character. You know, his whininess in Empire Strikes Back is more that he's being trained. He went to Dagobah with Yoda, and he has this vision of his friends in danger, in trouble. And Yoda tells him no. He's like, no, I have to. Like, he's complaining that he has to do something even though he shouldn't. But that shows his strength of character, that his friends are so important that he's going to stop, even though he knows he's probably not ready to face Darth Vader. And it wasn't that he wasn't ready to face Darth Vader. It was that I think Yoda just knew that he wasn't ready to learn the truth, because he had been told this half-truth, this lie about who his parentage was. And then you see a complete change of character in Return of the Jedi. You know, the only whininess that I would say comes up in Return of the Jedi is when he tells Han and Leia that he's in danger, you know, Vader's on that ship, I'm endangering the mission. But it's not really a whine. It's a true concern that he has. But I will say, if you go back and watch this, Han Solo definitely, or Harrison Ford, steals that scene as more of a cool, relaxed person during that scene, whereas Mark Hamill does play it as a nervous person going, but in reality, you got to think about the stakes that are at risk there.
Yeah.
You know,
I do think that Luke, he is highly strung. Like, I think that, I mean, that's fine. Like, he is emotional because he never tries to hide that he cares about stuff. That's what it goes into for me, that Luke never tries to cover up the fact that he cares about stuff or that he's worried about stuff or that, you know, anything like that. And whereas Han, you know, sometimes either doesn't care about stuff or pretends he doesn't care about stuff, which is why his explosions of melodrama are like, you know, Han is not like very in touch with his emotions. Luke is very in touch with his emotions, and no one has ever seemed to like suppress that in him. No one has ever seemed to be like, you know, boys don't cry, or no one's ever seemed to be like, you know, tell him to calm down, basically. He's very open, and I like, he's very comfortable with who he is at every stage of his life. Like, he has stuff that he comes up against that he's like, this is horrible. Like, even with his, you know, finding out about Vader, but even then he kind of rolls with it in a way that's just like, you know, immediately, like, he's calling him father. Immediately he kind of knows that, you know, or feels that like he should be, you know, helping his father. And he, you know, he doesn't have angst about himself, which I love, like, really a lot. I don't know if that's sort of how you see him, but that's one of the things that I really love about himself, that he's so comfortable about himself. He thinks the best of everyone. He brings out the best in other people as well. Like, kind of when they're around him, they're like, ugh, this kid is just, you know, it's not like he knows he's this big moral, like, beacon or anything like that. He's just so innately decent that other people are like, oh, this kid's so decent, I guess I gotta be decent too, if you know what I mean. It's not like an arrogance or anything like that of like, I am the Jedi and I have to tell you how to be good. Even in Return of the Jedi, when he has that change of attitude, I have thoughts about that, but sorry, what were you gonna say?
Well, what I was gonna say is, your point is exactly right. He is such a beacon of hope throughout the entire original trilogy that he makes everyone stronger. In fact, it leads us right to Force Awakens, where, you know, Luke Skywalker is the MacGuffin. The whole thing is, hey, we need to find Luke. Why? Because he can change the tide of this. He can do something. He is that powerful. And I think throughout the trilogy, he starts to realize that. And you realize it right away in Empire Strikes Back that, you know, he is given this horrible news. Spoiler, that Darth Vader is Luke's father. And it's one of those things where just looking at his face when he finds out that's not true, that's impossible, and him screaming in the agony in Mark Hamill's face on it has always gotten me. Which is why when I read your article about the first time you're seeing it, Natalie, seeing the entire series, and you saw it through the Machete Order, it's my favorite. I've always argued that if you're introducing it, you need to see A New Hope, then Empire Strikes Back, because if the person does not know everything about, you know, the story of the family, you will ruin the surprise of Darth Vader being Luke's father. So you need to watch A New Hope and Empire. Then you can go do the flashback. You know, and then Return, he is calm, collected. There are some things where he's still the same character he has been in the previous two films. But he has something. There's something standing back, and he doesn't know how to breach it. And that's when he tells his sister, Leia, search your feelings. You know it's true. You know, he says, my sister has this power too. And then it's revealed to her. And he knows that he, you know, when you think about the scene on Endor, Luke turns himself in when we get introduced to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that
it's like.
That whole, I watched it last night, and it's my favorite of the original. Return of the Jedi is my favorite of the three. And what?
No, just growing up, Return of the Jedi, when I was a new Star Wars fan, Return of the Jedi was my favorite too. I will say, it's since changed to Empire Strikes Back, and I think that may have something to do with me analyzing these films for years and having gone to film school and appreciating some of the nuances of Empire Strikes Back. But growing up, I kid you not, Luke's lightsaber was always green to me. Regardless that he had the blue one for two movies, you know, his lightsaber was always green. It may or may not be one of the reasons why green is my favorite color. But it's one of, but I kid you not, like I said, Luke Skywalker was my imaginary friend growing up. But it's one of those things where – Return of the Jedi was my favorite film for the longest time. But again, I was a kid when I was into these films, when I first started loving them. There was Ewoks. I love the Ewoks, even though people hate them. You know,
I
like
think they're fine. I don't know why people hate them so much.
You know,
I like the Ewoks.
I do too. And I miss the Yub Nub song at the end of the original trilogy. You know, like that song at the end was just amazing. I used to sing it. And you know, here's the thing. Luke, in Return of the Jedi, Luke going to Vader and turning himself in is such a full arc of his story, of him being confident in himself, being confident in his power. He, you know, he is not a Jedi yet. Yoda even says it, that you're not ready. You know, you have to confront Vader again. And so he knows to complete his training to be a Jedi, he has to confront Vader. And so he turns himself in. And at that point, he is 100% positive that there is still good in his father.
The other thing as well is the bit that really got to me in that whole thing is when he, you know, he goes on and he's so calm about it. Like, the two big things about his sort of attitude in Return of the Jedi is one I'll talk about in a minute, which is how he's able to kind of turn on the power of being Luke Skywalker, which is, I think, something that's probably come into his character in the 30 years between now and Force Awakens, but it's the first time you see it here. But the other thing is that, like, does he think he's going to die? Like, he's going on to the Death Star to confront Vader. He thinks that, you know, Han and that are going to blow up the Death Star. And he says to kind of Palpatine, you know, or whatever, you know, you'll be dead or soon I'll be dead too. Like, he just thinks that, like, the Death Star is going to get blown up with him on it and that he's fine with that?
I mean, it's a character trait, I think, that you see as far back as Empire, and even a little bit in
when he lets go in the Cloud City, when he's just like, I'm gonna fall down the hole.
Yeah,
and
the thing is that
this is me, I'm dead.
There may be some people who have never seen Empire before the special editions, but they added sound into that scene where he's like,
No, it was only 2 years. I've heard Mark Hamill tell a story about this. Yeah, side note, Mark Hamill is my number one favorite celebrity now, just so everyone knows. And I don't say that easily. Like, he is everything I have ever wanted in a human being. Like, not because of Star Wars, because of, like, the way he acts about fandom and, like, literally his entire life from childhood. I have 24 hours worth of podcasts with him on my iPod, and he is my favorite person in the world.
Yeah, the first time I met Mark Hamill, I will tell you this, I met him at Star Wars Celebration 3 in Colorado. Just, you know, in passing, I'm a fan and everything, and I remember him just saying, you know, I remember people asking him all the time, and myself asking him to do, like, the Joker's voice and stuff like that. He is just such a amazing person, and everything from films like, you know, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, him making cameo appearances, it's just...
This is where I first discovered him. I'm a very big Kevin Smith fan from teenage.
He is such a cool person in general. His appearances as the trickster in, you know, the Flash TV series.
Yes.
You know, like, I just love Mark Hamill.
We should do another episode with a spotlight on Mark, not on Luke. Because I have a whole other situation going on there.
I'm sure we'll get that. We'll eventually do that, I'm sure. We have lots of people to talk about.
Yeah. But it really does bother me a bit to, you know, that people are kind of like, oh, he, you know, Harrison Ford, he succeeded after Star Wars. Mark Hamill, he failed. No, he purposely chose a very different life, and he's unbelievably successful in his field, and he's so amazing. And he cares more, like, he's the number one celebrity I've ever encountered that understands, like, fandom. Like, there are lots of, like, young celebrities who kind of understand it now. He is, like, pre-internet. Like, the way that he is about the stuff that he cares about is unbelievable. And, like, I've heard him, like, defend people, like, you know, defend fans to kind of other actors and friends that don't really understand it. And I've never, like, felt like a celebrity has, like, really got fandom in the way that he does. And I love that. But anyway, moving on from that, Mark Hamill, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, The Scream. That was only, like, put in for, like, two years or something. Like, George put it in and then he took it out, and it wasn't even Mark Hamill's Scream. He drew it from a Scream bank from somewhere else, and Mark was really pissed about it. He was like, no, that's not what that moment was. That moment was not him, like, being, like, freaked out. Like, that was a purposeful suicide, and no, that was really stupid that he did that, and I'm glad he took it out.
He made peace. Yeah. Like, when you watch it prior to, like, the special editions, when it has no Scream in it, that moment, he makes peace with what he's about to do. That's his choice, and the drop in silence is so powerful, and it echoes through, you know, him joining at the end of New Hope, him joining the squadron to blow up the Death Star, but also then again handing himself over to Vader. You have these echoes of him basically putting himself into those situations, knowing that there's a very large chance that he's not coming back from them. And you see it echoed through all three movies, and especially in Empire and Return of the Jedi, they're just such quietly powerful moments, which is what I love so much about Luke. But the adding the scream in, because I didn't see the special edition versions on DVD until I was about 15, 16 years old. I wore out my original VHS tapes that were my dad's. They were my dad's VHS tapes. They were the original releases before they added in anything at all. And they are like, I've still got them, but I don't have a VHS player to play them on anymore. We got rid of those, but I've still got the tapes. I refuse to let anyone take them out of the box of Star Wars stuff I've still got at my parents' house. And, you know, it's such a different experience when you see it without all of that added sound, and it's just ridiculous. It's one of the things that really bugs me, because it's such a really nice theme of Luke as a character through all three movies, because it echoes through all three, and it just bugs me that it was changed.
Yeah, he just, with Luke, just every time that he's kind of, I guess, feels like he, it's sort of the difference between, like, responsibility and ego, I think, because he comes to understand relatively quickly how important he is, but it doesn't really change, like, who he is. It's sort of he, you know, he has all these moments that are, you know, in Return of the Jedi especially, you see right from the start, like, that very calm attitude where he is, you know, confronting Jabba, and then, like, throughout the rest of the movie when he's confronting, you know, the Emperor, who, oh my god, that Palpatine watching them fight, like, makes me sick. Like, the way that he's so, like, yes, I hate him. But anyway, obviously we hate him. But the way that Luke has, like, yeah, whose favorite character is Palpatine? I'm sure they're out there. But the way that Luke kind of approaches all of those things, he comes to know how important he is. But whenever he's kind of private, or, like, you know, talking to R2 or whatever, he's still kind of got the same kind of personality and the same concerns and the same, like, chill, sort of goofy, more human side to him. And what I've always kind of seen that as, always, in my 3 months experience, is that Luke knows how to turn on being Luke Skywalker TM, if you know what I mean. He knows. And it's kind of in the same way that some celebrities, like, know how important they are to people. They know how to act with certain people, but when they go home, they know that that's, like, a part that they play. And I feel like Luke knows that he has to play the part of Luke Skywalker, savior of the galaxy, but it's not really who he is. And he's never going to stop being who he is inside, but that he knows how to put that on. And he knows that he has a responsibility, but the ego doesn't come with it, if you know what I mean.
So, quick question, if he has this responsibility, you know, and, like, Luke is such a powerful character through the whole series, you know, in Force Awakens, we don't really know what happened, you know, what caused Kyle,
yeah.
You know, we don't really know much in The Force Awakens or Episode 8 yet about Luke's character. We do know something happened, Ben Solo went down a dark path, he was trying to train a new generation of Jedi, and then now he went away. And there's all sorts of rumors, according to Han, you know, when he's telling Rey and Finn, there's so many things, but those who know him best, he went to go search for the first Jedi temple, which we know is on Actu, the planet that we see.
Presumably he found it, yeah.
Actu, the planet that has a population of birds and at least one Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, well, exactly. You like it how it's called Actu. And, you know, that planet is only named, you know, that only shows up in the Screenwriters Guild script. So they call it Act 2. I don't know if that's actually going to be it or not, but yeah. But, you know, we don't know. So, you know, when you're saying he has this character, you know, he did intend to possibly be willing to kill himself, give himself up for that, on the second Death Star. But he, really intended to try to save his father. There's good in him. He was constant on that. And he even said, now strike your father down, strike him down. He said no. He threw his lightsaber away. He kind of said no.
The throwing the lightsaber away is, we just need to take a about that moment because it's pretty humongous.
No, it is huge. And that's kind of showing the strength of his character overall. Yeah. But then, if he's Rey's father, there's some speculation. If in Force Awakens he's Rey's father, why would he leave it there? Even if he's not Rey's father, why would he completely abandon the entire universe if this bad thing happened? We just don't know enough about Luke going forward in this new trilogy.
There's just so many options. The Skywalkers have never been great parents. So, if he is, Rey's father, it would just be, he wouldn't exactly be setting a precedent like it happened before. But I don't know. I don't think I want that. So I know you guys talked about this last week, but I would prefer not to have that.
Yeah, well, I'm big hoping that it is. But at the same time, here's the thing. With Luke, we just don't know. With Episode 8, they showed the trailer right now of him coming, of him being there on that island. And the whole story is trying to find him. But, I just don't understand if he is this person willing to give himself for, to help the Rebel Alliance, to destroy the Emperor and Darth Vader. Why does he disappear? Especially if anything, why does he disappear that his sister doesn't know where he's at?
I have three options on this.
Okay.
I have three theories. Number one, for the same reason that he leaves, for the same reason that he leaves them in Jedi, because he thinks that Ben, that him being anywhere he is a danger to everyone else. Basically, that's number one. Number two is that he is on a long game search to find a better solution overall to the universe, if you know what I mean. There has to be a better way. We screwed this up 30 years ago. It's screwed up 30 years before then. And now, 20 years ago with Anakin becoming Darth, then the, 30 years ago when Luke had to fight Vader, and then now, it's all happening again. He's like, got to be a better solution for this in the long term, and goes to find. And also, again, one of the things I've discovered in my many, many months of being a Star Wars fan is that, the Jedi code that they're taught isn't quite right, or at least this might be an EU thing, that the original Jedi code was much more balanced than what they're taught in, the original, the prequel trilogy, and what, Ben might have passed on to Luke, and that he probably wants to, it's like a religion getting bastardized over time. The Jedi religion got bastardized over time, and he the idea that he might have wanted to go out and find the real heart of it and how to actually make a long-term solution. So there's that. Or number three,
I was going to say, that's interesting that you bring that up, because without going into too much of Anakin Skywalker, it was that part of him not liking the Jedi Council being corrupt, and him not letting, Mace Windu wanting to kill Palpatine, and him saying, no, you can't do that. He needs to be on trial. And then him ended up doing something that turned him completely to the dark side by killing Mace Windu. Obviously, he's being manipulated at the same time. But yeah, so it's definitely one of those things where the training that he had has been passed down over years and years and years, and it's changed. It's that game of telephone. One person said it's changed a little bit and a little bit, but at the same time, maybe he's gone off to kind of meditate because he's scared of how powerful he's become. He's kind of like a Yoda. He has to meditate on what's happening. We just don't know. All right, I know you have number three.
And even the original code, I think that there's something about, the whole, there is no, hate, there is only the original, further back, at least in some materials, was more balanced. It was like this, but also this, if you know what I mean. And it went from more of a balance to a black and white yes, no, and maybe he went and discovered that. And anyway, third option is that he's tired and depressed and can't do this anymore, basically. which is really sad, but...
Well, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, like that he is tired and he's depressed and that he just has lost faith in being able to help, that he is, you know, never wanted to be who he is. He never wanted to be this mythological religious Jesus figure. This is, again, this ties into the idea of him being able to turn, knowing when to turn on being Luke Skywalker, knowing when to use the power that he has for, you know, that he knows that he has, but that he's never really, he respects everything, but he respects his own responsibility, but I feel like he probably never was that comfortable being this icon, and that he's just like, no, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't. And then Rey will be the one to kind of bring him, not just bring him back to the fight, but to like give him hope and faith and like, you know, like be like, oh, I'm, you know, I am, I remember who I am and all of that kind of stuff. I remember why I'm important. And, you know, both in like, you know, his responsibility as being like Luke Skywalker TM and like he's also his real heart of just being like Luke and like being optimistic and putting himself forward and all of that kind of stuff. So I don't know.
So in episode 8, is he going to be a grumpy old man or is he going to talk to him like Yoda?
I really hope not. I think he might start out really grumpy, but I really hope not. That's my biggest fear, that they're just going to make him like a weird old man. And yes, he is a weird old man and like, that's fine. But that they're not going to hang on to anything of his, like, heart. Like, you know, they managed it with Han. Like, Han was still very much Han in his, you know, advanced years, and he had the same attitude. Yes, now he believes in the Force, and now he's a bit more intrinsically, like, I'll help out. But he still tries to, like, talk his way out of stuff, and he still, you know, makes the same mistakes. And I would really love it if Luke, you know, if we could show that Luke wasn't just like, yes, he's gone through massive trauma with Ben and with everything, you know, not just Ben, but probably losing, you know, all of his other Jedi students that he was probably, you know, very attuned to with the Force, you know, that they can kind of feel, I don't know how it works, but if they can like sense each other's feelings and stuff, like it seems like some of the Force sensitive people can do that. Like that he, you know, did he feel the whole destruction of the, Hosnian system, like, you know, obviously when his academy of Jedi students or whatever they're called, the whole, you know, the new, all the ones Ben killed, presumably there was a good handful. And yes, he's just gone through so much. So I'd understand why you would probably either never want to see a person again or have, you know, be totally miserable and not yourself anymore. But I really hope he's not a grumpy old man. I hope that, he may not be all that jolly initially, but I really hope that he's still the same kind of like sassy, like that he still is just like, ugh, about people being melodramatic. Like, I love his eye rolls in the background of things, like where he's just like, or when he's like laughing at people in the background of things. I love that so much. And I love that he, you know, he really, as I said, that he really cares about stuff, that he's really open and in touch with his emotions, and that it's not, and I don't think that he'd necessarily ever be all wise and like, you know, superior and because in my head, he's never that comfortable with being, you know, Luke Skywalker TM, that he would always kind of have that disconnect in his head of that's something I can do, but it's not who I am. So I don't know. I really hope he's not grumpy the whole time, and I hope that there is still some of this character in him, and that, you know, if they can show Han hasn't changed that much after 30 years, that also Luke still has some of the bits that make him Luke, not just the bits that make him Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I don't think I would want to see him being, like, grumpy old men or, like, that kind of archetype wise old men kind of... It just doesn't, for me, it doesn't gel with what we know of Luke as a character up until this point. It wouldn't fit for me, and I would be incredibly disappointed if that's the way that they choose to take his character, because that thematic thing of him through the entire original trilogy has just been so strong that it would be the complete opposite of what we know of Luke. So I don't want to see him as a grumpy old man. I really don't.
He's not meant to be that old. He's only meant to be like 50 or so. Like if you actually do the math.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Or he's 25, 55 maybe, you know, like 60 at the absolute max. So he's not like 80. He's not like something. And he's definitely no Yoda, like, you know. So.
not 900 years old. But, you know, he could definitely be, you know, based on his character from Return of the Jedi going forward, you know, I can definitely see him being more like Ben Kenobi in A New Hope. You know, having to impart information, being more selective in what he actually says, which I guess he's kind of like Yoda. But
he was so annoyed. No, I'd like to see the opposite because he was so – he's like, a certain point of view, are you freaking serious? at Obi-Wan in the last movie. So I'd like him to be like, look, I had these Jedi Masters. They said a lot of nonsense. They, you know, they were not really helpful to me. So
but think about it. Like, even in the end, though. With you. You know? Even at the end, he smiled at the end when all the Force Ghosts show up and everything. He sees it. You know, in the certain point of view thing, I think it's because they knew he wasn't ready for that type of information. Like, what if I told you now that the father you've never met was a psychotic murderer? You know, it's like, was the worst person in the galaxy.
I prepared for it because I've got Luke Skywalker as my, you know, as my life goal. So,
well, there you go. All right.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's our spotlight topic, Luke Skywalker. Thank you all for listening. Go ahead and drop us a line. Let us know what you think of Luke Skywalker. And if you are interested in winning a prize for Star Wars The Old Republic, go ahead and like or comment on our Facebook post when we release this episode, and we'll enter you into a drawing, and we will contact you and announce these winners on next week's episode. As always, thank you all for listening to Resistance Radio. My name is Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Natalie. I am a